Baker Mayfield, undraftable, off my board.
The Cleveland Browns select Baker Mayfield.
What a beautiful throw by the Baker!
Victor! Hasta la vista, baby! Touchdown!
Okay, welcome in, guys, to today's OBR Film Breakdown. It is a shift. You know, if you listened yesterday, was the last comprehensive film breakdown of the season. I went offense and defense together because I'm tired of talking about, well, let me put it this way. It was a pointless game, a lot of preseason vibes in that week 18 game. So didn't want to spend a ton of time on it, but also wanted to do, you know, complete the season with those comprehensive film breakdowns. So I hope you enjoyed listening to me yak at you there for 22 straight minutes. So going to have some guests on the rest of the week. We're going to do some fun stuff. I'm going to actually pre-record several of these because I'm going away on a work trip. So if something crazy happens, I'll get to it probably Friday night for the Saturday pod. But otherwise, having on some good guests, pre-recording some season recap stuff as a means to put a bow on this thing, which we'll do for the most part in January. But I do think there's several of these that we need to get to right away, I think, as the season ended two weeks earlier this year than last year. And we got to find some things to talk about to cover up, you know, the warts of this year before we dive into next year. So some fun topics. Today, we did get Andrew Berry's press conference, so we're going to talk about that. That should be pretty fun. Then we're going to do, I don't know if these are like awards or what do they call these, superlatives? I'm not sure. We're going to welcome in Jordan Zerm. I think he's a really great guest to do this with. Jordan, what's up, man?
Jake, what's going on, man? Good to talk to you. We were just talking about, but I was just in Cleveland for 3 weeks. Just returned to Los Angeles on Saturday, and I'm going to refrain from saying what the exact temperature is here on the pod. I just don't want anyone to be too upset, you know. But it is wild going from. It is very wild. It is very surreal to me going from like what the weather was in Cleveland, which was very cold, snowy, to what it is now in Los Angeles. But as I told you before, it's good to get back. I can't lose my Midwestern roots. I never want to become the person that's like in LA wearing a winter jacket when it's 65 degrees out. If I become that person, then somebody please just punch me in the face. So it was good to get home, be home for the holidays, get some of that cold weather in the bones, toughen me up again. So hope the new year and holidays and everything was good for you as well.
They were great, man. I would equate this to your like keeping your Midwestern card. You got to come back and renew it
every 100%.
Every stretch of time you got to come back and renew that thing. I work from home, so I don't go outside some days. So like, you know, I'll go out on Tuesday to put the trash out, and then I'll be like, wow, it's extremely cold, and then not go back outside until like Thursday and forget. You know, the weather shifts so much here. Anyway, we're out in the weeds, but nonetheless, I'm off to Texas. It'll be a little warmer, so I'm pumped about that.
That's great. I'll tell one story before we get into stuff. One of the final days I was home, I was meeting my mom in the morning for coffee, and we had texted the night before, and she was like 10 a.m. She knows I'm not exactly a great person at getting out of bed on days where I'm not working. So I was like, no, 10 a.m. is fine. Like, I'll walk up there. I'll meet you. The coffee shop's like a 5-minute walk. We're in Cleveland Heights. And I wake up the next morning. There's a text from my mom. It's like 9:30. She's like, just want to make sure you're still going to meet me. I'm like, damn, mom, you really think like I'm the latest person in the world. I text her back. I'm like, yeah, of course. The room I'm staying in at my dad's house at the time, I had the blinds closed and there's another window there, but you can't really see out of it very well. So I'm getting dressed and, you know, all that. And I walk into the living room, and it was like blizzarding in Cleveland Heights that day. And so I walk in the living room and I look outside. I'm like, oh, that's why she texted me. I was like, well, it's too late now. And so I just, you know, trudged through a snowstorm to grab some coffee to meet my mom. But it was great. That was the day that I felt like I had, I got the check on my Midwest. I renewed my Midwestern card for like another year. So I felt good about that.
Yeah, it's official. You got to go through some sort of experience. Could be like traffic. It's like ridiculous traffic for no reason where it just bottles up and you're like, there was no accident.
Yep.
This is weird. Okay. Or it's the weather, or it's somebody just being rude for no reason like that. That's another thing that can keep it refreshed for you. But anyway, let's talk about Andrew Berry. He talked today. I'll leave the floor open. I'm not going to guide you any one direction. Anything? I mean, he was going to get 72 Baker Mayfield questions. Is there anything that stood out to you?
I guess I was surprised with sort of the, like we briefly talked about this before we started recording it, the sort of loud support he gave, for about as loud as Andrew Berry gets in terms of like any sort of definitive answer, saying, you know, he was asked straight up, is Baker Mayfield your starting quarterback in 2022? He didn't really hesitate. He said he is our starting quarterback, looking forward to him getting healthy and all that. I was a little surprised about the definitiveness of that answer. But at the same time, Jake, and I have a feeling you may feel like this as well, I think actions speak a lot louder than words in this situation, especially for Andrew Berry, who I think has become very deft at like not saying a lot. And even if he does say some stuff, it may not be exactly what he's feeling at the time. I would be shocked right now. And I think this is what Kevin Stefanski said too. And the report that I think Ian Rappaport had it a couple days ago about the Browns wanting to move forward with Baker. I just would be shocked if right now, a week after the season, before they know any sort of situations with quarterbacks maybe coming available by trade or free agency, before any of that, that they are just like, yep, Baker's our quarterback in 2022 and moving forward. Like, there's just no chance in my mind that that is sort of where they're at. Now, I think as they've done all season, especially Kevin Stefanski, they have protected Baker in the media, and they are not going to say anything that's going to throw him under the bus. Like, that has been very, very clear throughout this entire season. And when I say actions, I also mean, like, Barry seems pretty content in terms of, like, if they decide that, listen, there's no upgrade that makes sense for us in terms of what it's going to take to get that type of quarterback as an upgrade, like picks we're going to have to give up in a trade or whatever. But it doesn't sound like he has any desire to sign Baker to an extension. Like, they're going to let him play. If he is the quarterback in 2022, they're going to let him play on that fifth year option. And then we'll see where it goes after that. But to me, that continues to speak volumes about how they feel. So until they offer him an extension, or, you know, so, or you're going to, and I have a feeling you're going to hear some rumors as we go through the offseason about who they're looking at in terms of quarterbacks and stuff. I just am not convinced that Andrew Berry, who I still believe to be a very smart, data-driven guy, that they just had one exit meeting with Baker and were like, okay, cool, next year, we'll see you, you're our guy. So while I was surprised, I guess in summation, Jake, while I was surprised about how sort of vocally supportive he was and definitive in that answer, I don't actually believe that they have solidified their starting quarterback's situation next year by any means.
Yeah, I think you have to look at it as what is to gain and be lost, right? If you're Baker Mayfield supporter and you are convinced he's coming back next year, this was like the best press conference ever, which, cool. I mean, he said things you would if you were thinking Baker's back, he said things that you would expect him to say, which, true. You got to think of it from the flip side, though. And I know you're saying the same thing here. If he got up there and said, well, we really don't know if we envision Baker as a long-term starter. We think he might. And I know some places don't even do what Andrew Berry did. I'm pretty sure today Frank Reich was noncommittal about Carson Wentz in the future. Like, he wouldn't commit to him as the 22 starter. I'm pretty sure I read that today in conversations he had with the media. But what... You got to understand what the Browns are doing here. It's clear they want to support Mayfield, but they also know that the public game is how they keep his value alive to an extent. If they were waning on providing him, the we're going to start you angle, you're our starter, you're our guy, then it puts doubt that, well, if the Browns don't believe in him, why would we trade for him? And I'm not saying they're going to trade him just like you're not, Jordan, but they have to build him up publicly if they think they can come off of him for the right player. You cannot tear him down, and we don't know if Baker's going to be on our roster next year. We're exploring all trade. They're not going to do that right now. And I don't even know that they ever will go out and say that, but you have to understand, it's two things can be true at once. They can be of the belief that if Baker's here, he's our guy and we're going to support him. But also, if we are playing the media angle for how we keep Baker's trade value alive, if the right deal comes in our, you know, lands in our lap, we have to do this publicly as well. Do you get what I'm saying? Like,
you have to
do both sides of the coin there to keep it alive. And I'm not saying that they're like sitting here, Andrew and Kevin behind closed doors are telling themselves, we are going to trade them. There's not a doubt in my mind. I'm not trying to tell you that. I'm just trying to tell you how you play both sides of it so that if Russell Wilson, if you get a call from Russell Wilson's agent says, hey, he'll come to Cleveland. He believes in you guys. I'm just saying, this might sound far-fetched, whatever, but he believes in you guys. Well, you know, you got to convince Seattle to take Baker back. Well, then you can't have, just a month ago, you guys were saying you didn't even think he was going to be your starter. Why would we want him? You know, that kind of stuff. So,
yep.
I think they did a nice job with it.
Yeah, and I agree with everything you're saying. And I also think, too, the point to be made is, again, if they, yeah, like we said, if there is not a better option, whether it's because they just don't want to give up the assets they're going to have to give up, or let's say, you know, for whatever, Russ signs back with Seattle or another team kind of snags him and Aaron Rodgers stays in Green Bay and the Deshaun Watson stuff is too toxic and too much and they don't want to touch it, then you have to maintain some sort of relationship with Baker, because then it's like, well, yeah, there isn't a better option right now, so we're going to play Baker his fifth year. And if it's already, we've talked about this on a past pod, it's already going to be some awkwardness there when they don't sign him to an extension and he's just going to play out that fifth year option, which seems kind of inevitable right now. But you don't want to make it to a thing, yeah, right, where if like both Stefanski and Barry had come out in these exit interviews and been like, yeah, Baker was pretty bad, we expected a lot more from him, we're not sure how to move forward, like, there's almost no point of return there. Then it's like, exactly, you know, Baker's seeing those comments and he's, you know, the media back and forth already started a little bit last week. So we already see and have seen what that can devolve into. So you want to stay away from that, because it really does feel like a 50-50 chance that Baker is back, because there is so much unknown about available other options. So they are towing a line. And I think you've heard Andrew Berry and Stefanski talk about relationships and culture in the building. And especially after some of these exit interviews where a lot of the defensive players were like, we just weren't connected. Like, we were, the defense and offense was siloed and there were relationships in the building. Baker even talked about it in interviews he did with ESPN and NFL Network. Like, there was clearly some stuff internally relationship wise with that whole team this year. And so the last thing you want to do is continue to sort of put the nail into that crack that has sort of developed a little bit. So they are walking a fine line. And I think, again, yeah, while me and you maybe were a little surprised about Andrew Berry's kind of firm comments, it like you said, they're not going to come out and be like, nah, we don't know. We don't know if Baker's our guy. Like, that just doesn't really do anything helpful wise for this organization. So it remains a very fascinating offseason ahead of us.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
And you're dealing with some fragility at quarterback. Like, clearly Baker's 100%. On the precipice of like, of going off the edge of this place doesn't believe in me. And there's a whole bunch there that you really don't want to get into with him. So you do. And this pod is not Jordan and I telling you, hey, they said this, but here's what they really meant. That's not what we're trying to do. I'm trying to give you an example or talk you through how teams say one thing when they're really also keeping their options open for another thing. And again, that other thing is not Kyler Murray at the top of the draft, like the Cardinals' famous, we believe in Josh. That was a sure thing. It's not that. The Browns very much have a ton of gray area with getting a new quarterback here. There's like trades and signings and cap figures, and it's why. So I just don't want you at the end of, if they start Baker next year, to think, well, told you, they didn't even consider another quarterback. They're doing that. I'm just telling you, they're doing that. That could ultimately, like Jordan said, point back to end up in Baker Mayfield's, the ball could be in his court. He could get the job by default. They could not make a deal because nothing came to fruition. Nothing made sense. But like this interview today is not like, it just wasn't a firm stamp on they believe in Baker Mayfield is you sign him to another contract. Like you said, that is their, when you want to be like the, I told you so person, when they sign him to another contract, that's when you can do that. So again, but it was a good interview. There was nothing wrong with it. They said all the things that you should want to hear. I would hope that they're not completely bailing on Baker because he might be your best option going into next year. And there is a world, a universe here where he does get back on track to what he did in some of 2020. I'm writing on it today, how he lost his way. It's going to be up tomorrow. What can he do to get the mechanics back? They're laying out all the ways this offseason can go and where the playoffs ultimately lead in 22. A path of that is Baker getting it back and being the guy. So we'll see how much they trust that or what percentage of belief they have in that. That's to be determined. Okay, let's shift gears here a little bit. And Barry said a bunch of other stuff, very, very, bringing Clowney back and liking the rookies and all that. Is there anything else? I should ask that, Jordan. Is there anything else that stood out to you?
No, I don't think so. I think obviously it was Baker dominated. I did find it when he said we have a lot of core pieces on this roster. And I thought there was a lot of truth to that too, which is why, there is so many questions about the quarterback position, because the Browns do have a lot of core pieces on this roster in terms of the window for them to really make a deep playoff run, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And I'm sure we'll touch on some guys as we get into this next segment, but I thought that really stood out because that's why these quarterback conversations are so, so important, because you look at, especially the strides some of the guys on the defensive side of the ball made, not just Myles Garrett, who is obviously, the marquee name, but they've got a chance to be really, really good everywhere around the quarterback position. I think maybe offense needs a little more configuring than the defense does, but like they have a chance to again be a really, really good football team next season. So I thought that was really interesting, but it also gives a little insight into Andrew Berry's thinking, which again, we can we can parse words and all that stuff and try to find meaning in everything, but when he says they have core pieces, I really think that is a pretty truthful look into how he feels about the roster and how they feel about next season, in that we're not going to run it back player for player, scheme for scheme, because this season was a bit of a disaster, but there's a lot of good players on this roster and we have a window to kind of get after it. So that was really the only other big thing that stood out to me.
Yeah. The window stuff. Very true. They know they're close. They are a couple key moves away from getting where they want to get here. So let's talk recapping last year. We're going to do these straight out of the yearbook. Sometimes teams vote on some of these things. We've made a couple categories up. We got a bonus category at the end. We'll start offensive MVP. This was not a good offense, Jordan. It was a rough group.
Sure wasn't.
One that only scored, I think I tweeted it out, since week five when they were in LA. Since that game, they only scored three touchdowns in an offensive game three times the rest of the way from week five on. So it was brutal. It was not fun. But I want to know who you think. I'll give you the lead off on this one, because the defensive MVP is going to be so easy that I want to do that one first. So I'll let you go offense first.
Cool. Well, offense, maybe you may have the same person as me just by process of sort of elimination. I'm still riding with Nick Chubb in terms of offensive MVP. I know there were some games sort of in the back half of the season where he struggled a little bit, where he didn't quite look like himself in terms of his confidence finding the right hole and cutbacks, but really outside of a couple games against Baltimore where they just stacked up the box, those back to back with the home and away sandwich between the bye, or on either side of the bye, I should say, and maybe a couple other games there. He obviously, there was some missed a little bit of time too, but I just think when he is on, and I think the game against Green Bay was really a game where after those struggles in those two or three games before Green Bay, where he really looked like himself again. And there are just so few running backs in the league, Jake, that I think have the combination of power, speed, but also just his vision and how he cuts and how he can see things and holes develop down the field, really sometimes before like they're even there. And I do think it's hard to go back and remember, but man, how good he was against the Chargers. I was at that game in person in Los Angeles, first Browns game I had been to in person in a really long time. And just watching him operate, man, he remains just a top, you know, if not top one running back, top three running back in the NFL, even with sort of a down year for everybody on this offense. He just is, I think, just that special combination. And when he is on and when he is healthy and right, like there are just few running backs I'd rather have back there than Nick Chubb. So I'm going to give it to Chubb, just a combination of he's still, you know, such a integral part of this offense and can do so many things for you, but also, you know, a little bit of, man, there just wasn't a lot of else going right on the offense. But for the most part, Jake, I think for maybe about 75% of the season, Nick Chubb was the guy we all thought he was. And I'm really excited again about him next year. I'm hopeful that the offensive line can have some better health luck next year than they did this year between Jedrick and Jack Conklin and all the COVID stuff and switching guy and playing Betonio on at left tackle and all the stuff that they had to do. Chubb still was able to thrive for most of the season. And so I am continually amazed by just the type of player that he's become.
I can't argue with Nick. I mean, he's their best weapon. He's a guy that, by virtue of modern NFL, makes us argue about running the football not enough, even though the Browns run the football a ton. he is a divider in a good way. He will make you want to give him the football all the time, even when the data tells you shouldn't give it to him. He's great. He's fantastic. I went a little different. I went Joel Bitonio.
Because I like it.
He had the third best grade among all offensive linemen in the NFL. And he was elite again. He better be named an All-Pro. If he's not, I'm going to be really frustrated for him because he's so underrated. He had two elite games at left tackle when they needed him to play left tackle. He just continues to be what they need. Like, he just is a steady beacon of leadership, of performance. He doesn't need to be vocal. He's a fan. He's just utterly fantastic in commercial process as well. Like, you know, him and Conklin in that commercial couldn't be topped. So that needs to be considered.
Better times, Jake, when that commercial came out. We were in a different state with this Brown season, and that was a joy to watch.
It really is. But here's a fun fact for you, too. So guys who played over 1,000 snaps this year, Wyatt Teller played 1,107, the same number as Bitonio. Treader obviously missed one game, so he played 1,039. Treader had 5 penalties, Teller 11. Joel Bitonio had 3 penalties as an offensive lineman playing left guard and left tackle. For the season, a 93.6 grade, as I said, third best in the league, 92.5 run blocking, 85.9 pass block. Just phenomenal. He's on a Hall of Fame trajectory. And I hope that, you know, I think people will see Joe get into the Hall of Fame, and I hope they don't forget down the line how good, consistent, if he can, I don't really think they're going to ever consider moving him to left tackle, but like, if he wanted to say, here's my stamp on being in the Hall of Fame, I'll move to left tackle, we'll let Jed move to right, and we'll figure this out for the next 5 years. Like, that would be it. I still think he can get in the Hall of Fame by sticking at left guard no matter what, because I think he's that good. But I just think this year, and a year that's a bummer, it's a letdown. Nick is a great answer too, but I just don't want to forget about Joel because I think he put up one of his best years ever, to be honest.
I think that's a great call. He obviously, you said it. It's funny to think about. This is probably a topic for another pod on another day. But man, for all the sort of misery and toughness that a lot of, you know, the Browns since 99 has been, they have churned out some offensive linemen, you know, like guys that have played here. But like Alex Mack and Steinbach and like Joe Thomas, obviously, and Bitonio. Like, you just think about some of the names that have played on some of these Browns lines. And for as bad as they've been everywhere else on the field for the majority of the time that they've come back since 99, they really have had some incredible offensive linemen come through Cleveland.
They really have. 6 games for Joel above 90. Here's how he closed the year, okay? Week 11 on, 88.5, 89.5, 91.8, 91.5, 82.6 in his final game at left tackle. He did have a poor game in Pittsburgh when he moved back to left guard. He had a 55, but then he closed with a 90.7 Cincinnati. So really, really good year. His best collective grade year in the NFL now at age 30, just turned 30. So hopefully he's got three or four more good years we could have with Joel and get him to some heights he hasn't seen yet. Let's switch to defensive MVP. I don't think it's really a debate. Myles Garrett had 18 sacks.
Yep.
And he was extremely, I think you could make a case for Denzel Ward coming on, but Myles was so, so special this year. Again, another year where he hasn't quite closed with the fury that we would have loved to have seen him to maybe convince the voters for a defensive player of the year. Still only 24, I believe, not quite 25 yet, or maybe he did just turn 25. I'm not sure. But you know, just a phenomenal football player that the Browns are so lucky to have, man.
Yeah, and I think, you know, unfortunately, I think that groin injury really slowed him down. I think he, at the end of the year, I think he mentioned in an interview, I think maybe in the second to last, before the, not before the Cincinnati game, but before the Steeler game, just about how it was hard for him to kind of get that same explosiveness off the line. And he was doing more kind of bull rushing than he was anything else because of the groin injury. But yeah, man, he is the definition of a freak of nature. And I think really the only thing that can hold him back is health. And he's dealt with some stuff kind of every year he's been with the Browns. And but it's just kind of the nature of that position and the physicality that he plays with. So no, he's an absolute freak. He's going to be a freak for a long time. So it is it's special to watch. And yeah, my honorary mention was going to be Denzel Ward, who I think had a really incredible season. I think about the last time that we were riding a high with the Browns was that first win over Cincinnati, where he just, you know, he started things off with the pick six and had himself, really the Browns secondary in general, but Ward had himself an amazing day. And I think he doesn't always get the credit he deserves because he's so quiet. And sometimes it can be hard to tell, you know, who's a side when you're watching the game from the camera angle. They give you, you know, sometimes guys, he's gotten blamed for stuff where he was in zone and it wasn't his fault. So it's just always hard. But he, I think this season made as many plays and a sure tackler, made some really big, had some huge hits, you know, shutting down little swing passes out of the backfield and all that. So no, I think the Browns in terms of Ward and Garrett have two absolute stars on the defensive side of the ball. So, but no, Garrett, this one was easy in terms of Myles Garrett grabbing this one.
Yeah, he had 78 total pressures this year, and he's had seasons with more snaps on the field. Like last year, he had 875 snaps, and in 2018, he had 1,012. So this year, he gets up above 70, up to 78. His previous high was 67. 18 sacks, previous high was 15 through Pro Football Focus, who I think does a better, fair job with sack data. He had 45 hurries, 15 quarterback hits, 3 batted balls. Yeah, just a really good season. His highest collective grade, his previous high was 86.9. He had a 92.0, a 92.7 pass rush grade, also a career high. So an all pro season, very good year for Myles. He's okay. He's okay. He's going to be fine. He's going to be.
Yeah, I think he'll be all right.
All right. Let's talk unexpected player of the year. I'm going to go. I'm going to go not as off the rails as you might think here. Didn't quite grade as high as I thought he did. Not that grades are the end all be all here, but I think I expected very little from Clowney, Jadeveon Clowney. Like I thought,
okay.
I thought he would be okay. I definitely was banking on an injury issue, but it never came. He played 14 games. He was really, really good in those 14 games. I thought he only graded a 69.1 pass rush, 67.5 overall, but he had 53 pressures. He had 11 sacks, according to Pro Football Focus's metrics. He had 32 quarterback hurries, 24 tackles. He had 26 stop tackles. Like, I just thought, as far as what your dream could be for Clowney, and I was expecting low, not even great. You know what I'm saying? So I thought he was an unexpected, really, really good player. Thought he could be fine. I was trying to remind myself that he would just be, you know, he's a one-year guy for a reason. To me, if he can get a multi-year deal done here, I think it should happen. But I just was really pleased. I did not expect him to be as good as he was and as consistent as he was as well.
I love that pick. That's a great pick. Yeah, he played out of his mind. I mean, I think he had the most sacks in his career outside of one season, like early in Houston. I forget which year it was, but
I think it was the year right before he went to Seattle, that last year.
Yeah. So, you know, for a guy that hit the biggest criticism and probably a little bit unwarranted, but yeah, a lot of the criticism about him is he doesn't get to the quarterback that often and doesn't kind of finish up with sacks. I mean, yeah, I don't know what more you could have asked from Clowney for this season. I love that pick. I think that's great. Him and I really hope the Browns bring Clowney back, and him and Garrett is, you know, pretty serious. And it also looked, Jake, like just in terms of his mood, you know, Clowney, I think can be a bit of a moody guy, especially when he's not on a team that's winning very often. And that's, I think that also outside of injuries contributes sometimes to why he sort of disappeared in those sort of Titans Seahawks years. And he just looked really happy in Cleveland. And he's, you know, he had some quotes throughout the year and in his exit interview about just like how much he enjoyed playing football here, and playing alongside Garrett probably helps a lot. Like, I just think that defensive line sort of bonded together. So it was just really cool to kind of see that. I went in a little bit of a different direction here with mine, just because this wasn't like a guy that really contributed year long, but when he did contribute, it was just kind of really a special story. I kind of went with De'Ernest Johnson, and I did that because, you know, nobody, when you have one of these running backs that's sort of, you know, the third string or the fourth string and doesn't get a ton of playing time, and then all of a sudden you have this Thursday night game where guys are out with COVID and injuries and Mayfield's out. So you've got Case Keenum, and that was a huge game against the Broncos. Like, the obviously playoffs were still very much alive. They needed to win that game. It was Thursday night. And De'Ernest Johnson just balled out, man. And it was just like so fun to watch him do that. And his story, everybody knows his story by now and like what he's been through and all of that. There's a really great feature on him, I believe by Let It Fly Media, that people have probably seen clips from, but it just, if you haven't seen it, just like Google it or put it in on YouTube, and just a story about, you know, where he came from and you know, his journey to get to the NFL and stay in the NFL and all that. And just seems like a really, really good dude. And I remember the press conference where somebody told him that LeBron had tweeted about him and freaked out. Like, I just loved Ernest Johnson so much. And man, even in spot duty, he had some really, really just huge plays. Jake, I'm blanking on what the opponent was, but they had like a 3rd and 9. This was a couple games ago where they handed it off to him and he picked up the first down. It was a huge first down, and I'm blanking on which game it was, but it was recent. And then even watching him against Cincinnati at a game that was, you know, end of the year, meaningless, didn't mean anything for the Browns, but just watching that dude, you know, get carries and play well, like, so unexpectedly, De'Ernest Johnson in the limited time that he played, but he had some, you know, he was called upon and he did some really, really great stuff. And it honestly was really fun to watch. So hats off to De'Ernest Johnson. He was my unexpected player of the year just because of how well he played when he was in there. And, you know, just a guy that you didn't expect to be in games and have to kind of carry a little bit of the load that he did. And he came through. So the De'Ernest Johnson story is one of my favorites just in all of the NFL, not just the Browns.
It's a great answer. I didn't even cross my mind. He really alleviated both guys. He helped you feel mm-hmm. like, you know, Kareem's injury issues weren't as big a deal. And he's good. I think you're thinking the Packers game. He had a couple.
Yes, that's
huge
what it was.
Run,
yep.
The Packers game that put them down. One put them like a 30 yarder down the goal line. But yeah, it was a 3rd and 9 that he broke it for like 30 yards. Now up the right yep. sideline.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly, that yep. That's a great answer. He had over 500 yards. He's a back, dude. He's not a great top speed guy, but he gets to his top speed quick, which matters. He can really feel when people are over pursuing his current angle and stop and get back up field quickly, which is, you know, sort of an uncanny thing. I don't know if he's in Cleveland long term or if he is a restricted free agent, ends up going somewhere else, but a good player that deserves to get some touches and some money in this league. And I hope it works out for him. That's a great answer. Rookie of the year. This is a tough one. I think you could go either way. I mean, I think it's JOK, just because of this, he was more consistent in opportunity. Like, I don't know how to phrase that. Like, he just had a lot of opportunity, made a lot of impactful plays. I think Greg Newsom did. You could go either way, in my opinion. Either of those guys would be a fine answer. But JOK, kind of seeing what his cap is, you know, thinking the things would translate from his his college tape to the NFL, what would it look like as a box linebacker? The way he plays linebacker like a running back, where you can't get a hand on him inside the tackle box, but he also maintains gap integrity. He got so much better as the year wore on. He plays the game at a different speed than everybody. So, so good. I really, really loved his season. He was ended up as a mid-70s collective grade, which is fine by my standard. I think that ends up being pretty good for a linebacker in their first year in the NFL. I liked a ton of what he did. I really did enjoy Greg Newsom, too, who showed, hey, man, I can play outside and be really good, and I can also be a slot and play really well in that. And that with the corner room they have, his ability to do that is really, really – it's really, really important, and I like him a lot, too. So I went JOK, but I'm not sure if you did, too. I'll let you field away on those.
I match you in the exact answer. I had written down either JOK or Greg Newsom. So I also would give the edge to JOK because I think you nailed it. I think he just, was probably on the field outside of his injuries, for more snaps and just maybe, played – made a little more of an impact just because, like you said, I mean, especially against the run, but he was just everywhere, man. Like, I think that's a sign when a guy is going to be a player for a while. Like JOK and his little, I just loved his little, the towel that he always has hanging out. It's just kind of flapping in the wind as he runs like everywhere on the field. And so you're just like, oh, there he is because of the white towel. And you were seeing that white towel a lot. He's awesome, man. I, to be honest, I didn't watch a ton of Notre Dame games a season ago when he was playing there. I didn't know a ton about him. I only really kind of learned about him because the Browns got connected to him, especially as he sort of fell in the draft. And so I didn't really know what to expect or kind of what kind of player he was. But, man, he just seems like he fits in terms of a linebacker that the Browns have just not had in a really, really long time. A guy that you're like, oh, that dude makes plays. Like, that dude is tackles for losses. That dude can blitz. That dude's speed is everywhere. It jumps off the page at you. And the Browns haven't had a linebacker like that in as long as I can remember. And that's really, really exciting. You can play him so many different spots around the field just because of his speed and the ground he can cover. And like you said, some of the routes he took to just get to the ball carrier, like guys couldn't get their hands on him, not only because of his speed, but just like angles he took. And like that stuff is so important. Like how many times did we see even other players on the back end of the Browns defense just taking really bad angles? So you look at JOK and very rarely did he ever sort of mess up his vision and his route that he took to bring a guy down and sure tackler. And yeah, man, I am like year two for him should be an absolute blast. So yeah, shout out to Greg Newsom who held his own. But I think JOK takes the cake here.
Yep, JOK, good answer. I think you could have had either of them and been fine, but I like our reasoning for JOK as well. Okay, let's do most improved. We have two categories and then the bonus one. Most improved, I'll let you lead off on this one.
Yeah, so there were two guys here for me that I kind of split on, but I'll just go through both of them quickly. One, I think... I don't know if this fully counts in this category, but because he didn't play as a rookie, but Grant Delpit to me was improved just going from what he went through in terms of, tearing his, I forget whether it was Achilles or ACL, but in training camp as a rookie and having to sit out that whole year after there was so much excitement about that draft pick and what he could be, missing the whole season, and then comes back and, there were obviously like games where he made an impact and then games where you didn't hear his name. But I just think in general, and especially the second half of the season, he really kind of came on and you saw him flash and you saw kind of what the Browns like envision with this sort of three safety kind of defense and personnels that they can run with. You know, there's so many injuries between John Johnson, Ronnie Harrison and Grant Delpit who, missed some time, but like, so rarely did they kind of get all three of those guys on the field and use them and employ them in the exact ways that they wanted. But I thought Delpit really kind of came on as like, okay, like we took this guy because of X reason and he's showing us that like he's going to be that guy and he's still so young and he fought back to rehab and all of that stuff. So part of me is like, okay, Delpit was great. And then the other one, I don't even know if this is sort of most improved because I think he's always been this talented. But like, I just think David Njoku continues to show why like he should be the tight end on this team. I wish he had more opportunities. Like, I wish he got the ball more. I've kind of wished this for the past couple seasons. Now I know that's difficult when you're running 13 personnel, so you've got multiple tight ends on the field. You're almost always having two tight ends on the field, and in any given formation. So like the opportunities are harder out of that set than if he just was always the one tight end on the field. But like, he's so talented. he's a freak like Myles Garrett is in terms of just athleticism and what he can do. And I just want him to have so many more opportunities, because when he gets them, he shows you what he can do. That catch he made in the Steelers game, like, it did, you know, it was a pretty didn't matter touchdown, but the Browns were still in the game. Baker threw it high and he still went up in the back of the end zone and brought it down. Like, he does that stuff like nonchalantly all the time. He's so talented, and I really hope that he gets to show more of it as we go forward and he stays in Cleveland. So I'm kind of split between those guys for different reasons, Jake, but those would kind of be my two answers there.
Both are great answers. I really like both of them. I don't think you can go wrong picking either of them. I think you could also throw in, I'm going to throw in MJ Stewart,
who I
thought found a role late in the year. He trying to see real quick kind of where he spent most of his time. He ended up being a nice hybrid player between slot and safety. Like, for example, he played 40 slot snaps in week 16, 51 free safety snaps in week 17, and then played like 80% of his week 18 snaps at free safety as well. I don't know. We could be. He just might have had a good three-week run. Might be overvaluing a little bit. But he had 328 snaps, and he graded at an 83.5 with an 86 coverage grade. He closed the year 81.2, 81.3, 80.6. And I think the eyeballs tell you that he was getting better too. So does he give you the comfort to walk away from Ronnie Harrison? I don't know. Maybe as that role player, but you know, you forget this guy just in 2018 was a second round pick. So he flunked out of Tampa, and sometimes guys find their legs other places. They start to figure out the game. So, you know, I it's going to be interesting to see what they do with him down the line, but I just thought he closed the year really strong. Ended up with 30 tackles. He ended up with four pressures, 15 stop tackles, including seven in that week 16 game against Green Bay, where he played out of his mind. But a pretty nice season. He only gave up in coverage. He only gave up 22 of 31. He only gave up 178 yards. He had four pass breakups on the year. So I just thought he had a nice season. I think he might have improved to the point that we see him as a part of this defense in a more important role moving forward. So I just want to kind of add him in. I think your two answers are pretty good too. I was almost leaning towards saying David if you didn't say David, so I'm glad you did. But I think we covered three guys there who got better 0-1 on. Now, we're going to close a little negatively. We're going to talk about the most disappointing season. This would be obviously compared to expectations. This doesn't mean we think they're going to be bad in perpetuity moving forward, but this is an important category. I think I got to go JJ3. You know, John Johnson was a guy when I wrote a huge article on. I can't think of a free agent signing that I have been more excited about. I really can't. The Odell thing was a trade. I think that as far as like they got a guy to come here that they needed badly, and he was a baller at his last location, this should be a perfect fit. It just didn't materialize. I thought he played a little slower than he had played in previous editions of himself. I don't really know why. Maybe he, like you, needs the LA weather out there to be the best version of himself.
He doesn't have his Midwest card, Jake. We gotta get him one.
We gotta get him a Midwest card. He was the eighth highest. Well, if you look at guys who have played a significant number of snaps, if you look at total snaps, John played the most on the team, and he didn't grade out horrendously. I mean, he graded out at a 68.7, a 70 tackle, a 66.5 coverage. Like, he was. It's not a bad year. They're all above average grades. But I think we had this idea, like, for example, last year in LA, he had 90 tackles, 31 stop tackles. Okay. This year he had 40 tackles and 13 stop tackles. So, you know, the role shifted. He was more of a deep guy than he was anywhere near the line of scrimmage, which he'd been in previous seasons. And, you know, it just isn't the best fit for him, in my opinion. Like, he played 652 free safety snaps this year. He only played 394 last year. He had 459 box snaps for the Rams last year, 132 for Cleveland this year. So completely,
that's wild.
It is wild. A completely different role. One I didn't expect, and really has changed how I thought about building your room about around a bunch of guys. Like, you know, is this whole conversation about, well, you're free, your safety room should be a bunch of different guys who can do, but no, you really need guys that can do defined things. Cause if you get guys that can't do defined things and you only have a bunch of guys who are actually really good closer to the ball, then you have to pick someone to stick deep. And that's not what you want. So I do think Cleveland could do themselves a favor, find a way to get John closer to the football next year, whether through personnel acquisition or scheme, whatever. He did end up with 3 interceptions, which is more than he had last year. The thing, though, like the ball production, he only had 2 pass breakups in terms of 9 last year. He wasn't around the ball quite as much, but I just hope they can find a role that gets him a little closer to the line of scrimmage, a little more one-on-one opportunities against people, tight ends and slots, because that's where I thought he was pretty good. He turned it on late in the year. His start of the year was brutal. He didn't grade above 63 until week 7, and it was bad. He played really poorly in New England. But if you take out the New England game, weeks 9, 11, 12, 14, 15, and then he was 18 because of COVID, he was 85-8, 77, 73, 76, 9. Like, he figured it out, but it came late in the year. I'm hoping he has a much better second year and they can figure out how to make him more comfortable and get some yoga for this guy, for crying out loud.
Yeah. You've been spot on with the John Johnson stuff all year, especially with those stats about where they're playing him and how they're using him. And hopefully they, you know, Joe Woods and the staff sort of review how they used him and how he was used in LA, and yeah, can tweak that a little bit next season. Also, just, yeah, like, personality stuff with him is a little weird too. Like, it kind of started early on. He was posting some weird anti-vax stuff on his Instagram story at the beginning of the year, just like stuff he was like grabbing off Facebook, like just weird stuff. And then
it's just not helping the situation.
Yeah.
Like, you can be anti-vax, but at all. Yeah, like, don't, you don't need, what do we need to do that? I'm with you. That was weird.
Don't do that. And yeah, then with sort of the, you know, he got a lot of grief for the run the damn ball tweet as he's watching the game from home. So just, yeah, it was a weird, it was not the smoothest transition in year one for John Johnson. So hopefully year two is better. I obviously Mayfield is on this list, but we have covered him ad nauseum. Yeah. So I'm not going to do that again. I didn't have huge expectations for this person, but man, the Austin Hooper thing is as big of a, I think, is if there is any major negative mark maybe on Andrew Berry's sort of tenure as GM, it is, I think it's been Austin Hooper. Just, I'm not sure what he's giving you at this point at all. He seems like he, you know, I don't have the list up of how many drop passes he was actually credited with, but it just felt like, man, he was dropping passes. You know, he's not a guy that's fast or is going to beat you off the line with speed. And I think we all knew that when the Browns sort of acquired him in free agency. And he was a guy that, like, you know, was known for, okay, he can find the holes in zone coverage. And he's going to be that sure-handed type of guy on third down that's going to get you a first when you need it. And he can find the spaces in the field when he's open. And he's just not, when he did do it, it felt like he was dropping it, or just like, I feel like his depth of target was just so low outside of a couple times when they got him free on a couple of nice sort of scheme creations from Stefanski. But it's just like, he just isn't giving you anything. It doesn't feel like you could replace him with almost anyone. I feel like you could just put Harrison Bryant and have Harrison Bryant do everything that he was doing, and you're paying him a fraction of what you're paying Austin Hooper. So I just, I guess, you know, relative to expectations, it's sort of like, okay, I wasn't expecting him to be some like Kyle Pitts out here or, you know, something like that, even on that level. But man, he just looks slow, and he dropped a lot of passes. He didn't look confident. I don't know, man. There was just the Austin Hooper thing just feels like a big sort of swing and miss. Now, listen, I understand it. I think, you know, this was Barry and Stefanski's their first year coming in, and Stefanski obviously was like, look, I want to run you know, 2 to 3 tight ends a lot. I want to run 12 and 13. Like, who can we get? And it felt like, okay, I'm going to go get you this guy. Like, let's see what we can do. He was a hot free agent, all of that stuff. So I'm willing to, you know, not absolutely kill Andrew Berry for it, but man, he just hasn't really made an impact. I didn't feel like he made an impact last season. Didn't feel like he made much of an impact this season. So outside of Mayfield and JJ3, which I had on my list as well, I think Hooper is up there with sort of disappointments for me.
It's a fair answer. Very fair answer. I think Hooper is another guy like John, who I saw him on tape at his former employer, and I'm like, he looks slower here. I don't know why. Yep. I don't know.
100%.
The Browns uniform. I don't know. It just, he does not. And not that he was packing a bunch of athleticism anyway, but he just has looked lethargic at times. I'm not sure. Just not the athlete I hoped he would be, even by my baseline expectations. And an example of, hey, you got to be careful of a guy benefiting from a really fantastic number one wide receiver and P. Julio Jones and taking advantage of zone options underneath all those things that created from Julio. So, but again, he's blocked his butt off. So I get the Browns for sure needed to raise the baseline of their tight end room. I get it. It just has never quite been like, we were all very excited for Austin Hooper. And it just, like you said, has not materialized. The hands have been inconsistent, much like Jarvis too, where you think these guys are very, very sure handed. And they're, if they don't have that, then it's like, okay, what are you really bringing to this to this table of chasing opportunity here that everybody wants? So good answer there. We'll close with this one. Last one is best dressed. I have mine's a little off the wall. I'll let you go first. It might not, okay, not even fit the category, but I'll let you lead off.
Oh, I'm excited to hear yours then. Mine is Grant Delpit. If you go through some of the, so it's funny because we do this at one of the things I started at the Checkdown when I got there in 2019 was we did something called Fit of the Week, where every week we would find four of what we thought were the best dressed guys coming in, and every team now, every NFL team now on their Instagram is posting arrival pictures. Like, it's like this in every sport now. It's become a thing of its own, where it's just photos of the guys arriving at the game and everybody's kind of trying to outdo each other in how they dress. So teams would post all those pictures. We'd go through all of them pregame, pick out who we like the best. And then we eventually had an illustrator on our team illustrate all four of the best fits that we thought. And then we'd run a little competition each week with who had the fit of the week, and we'd crown a winner at the end of the week. So I've been in the weeds, Jake, in terms of fits, in terms of all over the place. And for me, it's been Grant Delpit has just, he rocks some wild stuff. Like, you're not going to see me wearing the stuff Grant Delpit is wearing. You're not going to see a lot of guys being able to pull off the stuff. Maybe Odell was like one of the only guys in terms of like similar fashion styles as Grant Delpit, just like pants that are like nine sizes too big, or like an oversized hoodie that probably costs $2,000 that looks ridiculous. But if you know the brand and you know how much it costs, he pulls it off. So those LSU boys, man, between Jarvis, Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson, and Delpit, they've got some style. It's a little out of the box, but just take a minute if you're interested at all in this and go through the Browns sort of arrival posts from the past, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks, and just look at Grant Delpit and you'll get a kick out of it. It is stuff that again, I'm not going to be rocking. I'd get laughed out of any establishment I went into, but Grant has a lot more swag than I do, pulls it off. He's got that LSU swag, and it's good stuff. So yeah, check out Grant Delpit, check out his fits. He brought it, he missed a year. He had to make up for it, Jake. He had to make up for missing his rookie year and really go all out with the fits. So shout out to Grant Delpit for dressing very well for the Cleveland Browns.
I'm gonna take mine. You're right. That's a great one. I'm gonna take mine in a completely different direction.
Okay.
And it's involving Halloween. Okay. And it's good. It's not that Miles was the best dressed. The Grim Reaper thing was awesome. It's that he had to go to the post game after that brutal loss in the same Grim Reaper baseline outfit. He didn't think ahead to bring another set of clothes in case things didn't go well. So shout out to the confidence that it takes to wear the Grim Reaper, not the mask, but the whole underneath cape thing to the post game and own it. I just think it's like a microcosm of the season of where like Miles is.
I totally forgot about that.
So pumped about this outfit. It's so funny. It's like, he's the quarterback Grim Reaper. It's great. And then they lose that 15-10 game to Pittsburgh. And it's like, I would imagine he's sitting at his locker at First Energy Stadium. He's looking at his duffel bag and he's like, oh shit, I forgot anything else to wear. And now I have to go talk to the media in this cape gown like an absolute moron. And I just would like to have been there the moment that dawned on him. And maybe he doesn't care because he's Miles Garrett and he's from another planet and all that stuff. I don't know. But I just, that when I think of like clothes from the Browns this year, I just continually think back and chuckle about that situation Miles was left in after the Pittsburgh game. So
That is a great answer. I almost wish he had just like gone to the podium still in uniform and people have been like, did you like, what's going on? He'd be like, don't worry about it.
Yep.
You know, like, and
got to, nothing for you.
Just to piggyback off that too. I just thought the whole thing, the tombstones in the yard, was not only like, I still love it. I love that he did it. He caught a little bit of flack, but it's like, whatever. But mm-hmm. the best part of that to me too, as we're keeping up with sort of the Grim Reaper theme that he was going with that you brought up, was like all the players, all the quarterbacks that came up to him after games were like, why'd you put me in the graveyard, man? Why do you have to do that? Like, that was one of my favorite, like Lamar did it. Kyler Murray did it. Like that was one of my favorite running things. The entire season was guys just like good naturedly like coming up to Miles after games, be like, don't put me in the graveyard, bro. Like, why'd you have to do that? So I love everything about Miles. Like, he's just having fun with it. And like, he's so good that he can. And it was that was one of the lighter spots of the season, was Miles' whole Halloween themed between the yard and him sitting at the podium, which now I'm going to go back and look that up because I totally forgot he had to.
He looks so sad, dude. He looks so sad. Oh my goodness. It's hilarious. It's like a, you know, if you played sports in high school or college or something, you forget your fit for after the game and you're like, oh my God, I cannot believe I have nothing else to wear except for the same travel suit or something like that. But it's just really fun. And it's really cool. Cause Miles is, you're right. Like, the guy's coming up to him. He is. Odell was the extension to the greater part of the NFL, but that's Miles now, right? Like, he is the guy who's so universally respected across the NFL that he's where the cameras go after the game and all of that. And he's just great. So again, Jordan and I plan to do 20 minutes. We're 53 minutes into this thing. Seems to be how it goes, man. This was a ton of fun. I'm sure we're going to catch up in the next month or so about some other topic, recapping or looking forward. And it'll be a blast. I appreciate your time, Jordan, so much, man.
Yeah, man. Appreciate you covering the Browns as you do all season, man. It's fun to, always listening to you even when I'm not on the pod. So it's, I'm sure many other people feel this way, but always appreciate your coverage, man. It makes, even in a difficult Brown season, it just makes understanding what's happening with the Browns and understanding the why of like why they're struggling, what's going on. It's, there's not many people that are better at it than you, man. So appreciate you always having me on and always reaching out.
My friend, I appreciate you very much for those kind words. Thanks, man.
Of course.
Okay, we're going to close today. Listen, Jordan taking 50 minutes of his time on a day, recording this thing at like 3 o'clock my time, noon his time. Can't thank him enough for giving us his time and always providing quality insight. So again, if Jordan's willing to come on, going to have him on whenever he wants to, because he's one of the best. So make sure you check out. We have Chalk Talk tonight. Like I said, the next two pods will be pre-recorded. And those might be weird because I might not be talking about something that breaks. You never know with the Browns. Something could happen. Who knows? Whatever. So just keep in mind the next two or three pods will be pre-recorded. I'll be back for a live one, sort of caught up with everything over the weekend. So I'll check back in with you then. Thanks for supporting the OBR pod, supporting the OBR's Twitch or the website. Thank you so much for that. Everybody have a great Wednesday. Appreciate your time. And we close with the usual. Go Browns.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.